tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CeCe, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
You know, it just occurred to me that one day you want me to say you can call me Dee Dee, but I will never say that. I will never say that.
That's so all just, right, because I still have D-Nice. I still have D-Nice.
Oh, my goodness. So you call me out of my name, and I can't have that.
D-Nice. So, warning to all of our listeners. Today, Denise and I will be on very different ends of conversations. And at some point, it may sound to you as if we are arguing. And we are. But there's nothing but love.
Stop lying. You don't even like me. Oh, my God.
Nothing but love. So I want to start with something that we've talked about on past episodes, even though my partner in organizing didn't remember that we had. Rapper Offset from Rapper Offset, a member of the Grammy-nominated Atlanta hip-hop trio Migos, came under fire this week for his supposed homophobic lyrics on Boss Life, which is
it's on wax. Alleged.
A song by rapper YFN Lucci. The line in question is, "I cannot vibe with queers," right? Now, this song has been out for a minute, but they released the video, which kind of brought it all up. Offset, some of you might know him as Cardi B's fiance, who has been in the headlines of late because of his supposed cheating. Offset took to Instagram to say, you know, he posted a picture of the textbook dictionary definition of queer. First definition being strange or odd. And in his non-apology on Instagram, he explains that he don't have no issues with gay people. He has gay people around him all the time because of his passion for fashion. I mean, that is the song that Migos got big on, Versace. And he wrote that, quote, "When I wrote that, I was thinking of words that can rhyme with the others. Here, leer, solitaire, bear. And I saw this definition about her having a queer feeling. She was being watched, and it fit what I was thinking about a stalker, creepy paparazzi situation. To me, that queer, I don't mean someone who's gay. I mean lame people who film you, post it, and stalk you. Lingo that means strange or odd," end quote. Now, I know you're about to go in on this, but I am inclined to believe him because Offset is, you know, he's just looking for the right words.
He's always speaking Shakespearean English, is he not? He's always going way back to the old English definitions.
No,
of things.
But this is the
call him Sir Offset.
No, you can't say that about it because it is very true. If you open up a dictionary, this is still what you find for the definition of queer. He didn't say he was on Urban Dictionary online. I use Merriam-Webster and Oxford dictionaries all the time. And this is actually what is in those. Why is this hard to believe? Why are you coming for Offset? He basic. He trying to get his rhymes on top.
Look, here's what I believe. I believe that what I said, which is that somebody's mouth wrote a check that their ass can't cash. He realized at the end of the day that that lyric is in there and there's nothing he could do but backpedal from it. There's nothing he could do. So here he is trying to do the best backpedal stroke he can do, and nobody's buying it because the way that words work in
2018, you run in certain circles. A lot of people do not know what queer means. No, for reals. I, as you recall, had a project in Berlin that was against racism and homophobia, and I had the best-selling article was "I Can Queer Your Heartbeat." And an English woman comes to what is probably the biggest gay, not queer, gay festival in Berlin before Pride and bigger than Pride, comes over to my stand. She's standing next to another woman. They're, you know, they're visiting this festival together. She looks down at the bag, the tote, and starts laughing. So I'm like, let me wait and see what this is about. And the woman next to her, who she's with, says, "What does that mean?" And she was like, "Oh, you know, queer, it's something that's strange or odd. I can queer your heartbeat. I can make your heartbeat odd, strange. I should get that. That is literally what this woman said. Not everybody knows that queer is a new thing. I know queer people who don't like to use the word queer because they haven't gotten the memo that it's been reclaimed. Just like I know Black people who don't want to be called Black because they haven't heard the memo. You don't think that is possible?
I don't believe him. And if it is true, if it is true, then he needs to find a gay homeboy or homegirl that is doing more than just dressing him. He needs to go the H&M route and like let people hear shit. Because obviously he's ignorant as all get out if he doesn't know.
Really?
Stop it. Yes. Yes. Okay. Especially since this is not his first brush with the homophobia.
With the homophobia?
He's been coming down with the homophobia.
Oh, now you remember?
Like, yes. Okay. I remember.
For those of you who may not remember, we did an entire podcast on the fact that I Love McConan, who is also from Atlanta, and who used to be kind of tight with Migos, came out as gay. And Migos did not have the appropriate reaction to that. And then...
And they backpedaled
then,
too.
And they backpedaled on it. And they said that they were being misunderstood. And then... But with this one, we do have to caution. And then there were the rumors that there was an issue when on Saturday Night Live when Migos performed with Katy Perry, but we know for a fact that none of those rumors could be confirmed. Drag queens, Migos, and other people who were familiar with the situation all said that that was not true.
That's good. All I'm saying is that clearly he needs some education. I don't think this is about me using advanced English, and I don't think this is about him using old English. I think this is about him not even thinking it was going to ruffle any feathers, and it did, and so he backpedaled. That's what's up.
Well, I can certainly not have an issue with any type of education that Offset may undergo. I can be on the same side with that one. So let's get into something a little more tricky. What has been all over the news, all over the blogs, all over everything, is a certain 3,000 word essay written about Aziz Ansari, who recently...
It was 3K?
Yep. Who just recently won an award for best actor for his role in his own series, Master of None, which we've talked about several times on here. The piece, which was published on babe.net, which tells me something. Supposedly, babe.net is a feminist website. I doubt it. Anyway, the piece was titled, I Went on a Date with Aziz Ansari. It turned into the worst night of my life. Now, that is a provocative title in the time of Me Too and Time's Up. And in those 3,000 words, Katie Way goes on to detail a date that a 23-year-old Brooklyn-based photographer who was then age 22 had with Aziz Ansari. Person remains anonymous and goes by the name Grace in this article. For those of you who haven't read it, the brief overview is they met at an after party of the Emmys last year. There's a little flirtation. They exchanged numbers. They flirted a little more via text. And then they went out on a real date in person. And allegedly, they engaged in what she considered non-consensual sexual activity, oral sex and kissing and such. Now, Aziz Ansari read the situation differently, which we know from text. There were receipts. He reached out to her the next day and said it was, you know, a fun meeting. And then she replied that she didn't experience it that way and so on and so forth. And he responded with an apology. He said he clearly misread the situation and he sincerely apologizes. That's when the shitstorm took over social media and the interwebs. On the one hand, you had kind of your well-known, youngish feminists like Lindy West writing opinion pieces. Aziz, we tried to warn you. You had old school second wave feminists writing opinion pieces. This was just a bad date. Why are you ruining what is a watershed moment for feminists? A watershed moment that I have fought hard for and have waited for. And then you had the millennial feminists who were probably the most vocal and very much in their feelings, saying, this is exactly what sexual assault looks like. And everybody needs to understand this is our lives. I'd like to hear where you are on that scale, Denise.
Where am I on the scale? First of all, I just want to recognize your shade against millennials. I love me some millennials.
There was no shade. What was the shade?
There's no shade.
There was no shade. Very much
in their feeling.
Well, they were very loud and very angry about it. They were very loud and very angry.
Okay, so every woman, no matter what that woman's opinion, generally that I've heard state an opinion about this, is very much in their feelings.
I'm not in my feelings about it.
Even if that feeling is, I put up with this, why can't you put up with this? Mm-hmm. Even if that feeling is, I don't understand what all the fuss is about. This is just how the way the world works. Mm-hmm. Whatever that's a lot of feelings. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of feelings to have, regardless of the opinion. So my thing is that millennials are shedding light on some newness. I think that they understand that the behavior that Aziz indicated, if everything that was reported that happened between him and Grace, not her real name, is true, mm-hmm. Then it's a part of the continuum of rape culture. Mm-hmm. It's in there for rape culture. That's something.
This was not rape.
I said rape culture.
I just wanted to throw it in there for people who may have not read the article yet.
Mm-hmm. So rape culture is this idea.
This was not rape in the sense that the person, Grace, did not call it rape. I'm not saying it's not rape, but Grace herself did not call it rape. That's all I'm saying.
Another thing that Grace didn't call for that we should be clear is Grace didn't call for the ending of Aziz's career. She didn't call for, you know, he should be in prison. She didn't. So people have imagined things about what is.
Well, I think that has to do with timing, right?
Outcome of this.
I think it has to do with timing. I think the problem for those people who brought that up was, you know, he's accepted this award at the Golden Globes. He's a self-proclaimed feminist and so on and so forth. And as the article shows, she's mad that he had the audacity to wear a Time's Up pin, knowing what they had gone through, which I think is problematic that she thinks it's audacious for him to wear that pin.
There are men that know that they got skeletons in their closet. There was a director that even wrote, he was like, look, there's some stuff I did. And then his the person he did it to had to be like, hey, I know you're talking about me. It's like, yo, I didn't want to call you out. I'm really sorry. So, I mean, that people know that they have skeletons in their closet. And some people, maybe he didn't know. Maybe Aziz
didn't
know.
This isn't even a skeleton. This hasn't even had time to become a skeleton. This is still decaying. This is like the neighbor who died and we didn't know they died. And then all of a sudden we get a whiff. That's where we are. This just happened last year.
Yeah, it just happened last year. But even if it happened last month, the point is it shouldn't have happened the way it went down. There is no other... Sex is too significant, and the ripple effects of sex and physical encounters that involve any kind of sex are too significant to really accept anything except enthusiastic consent. And until enthusiastic consent becomes the norm, can I finish? Until enthusiastic consent becomes the norm, we are going to continue participating in variations of rape culture. Is it Harvey Weinstein rape culture? No, it is not. Mm-hmm. But it is the kind that some people can enact on that lower level, which is like, baby, baby, please, baby, please, baby, please, baby, please. Mm-hmm. And so 1, 2, 3 no's mm-hmm. are not enough. That's mm-hmm. a problem, especially when there's a high probability when you disappoint men that the response could be violent, that the response could be career ending for you as a woman, that the response could be all kinds of things that are disastrous for you.
Let me quote Barry Weiss in her opinion piece on the New York Times. I don't even like her, but there was one part of it that I did appreciate. Quote, the single most distressing thing to me about this story is that the only person with any agency in the story seems to be Aziz Ansari. The woman is merely acted upon, end quote. And the thing is, now, you know, besides the fact that Katie Way is obviously not a great journalist or writer and didn't give a lot of thought to what she chose to keep in the piece and not, there are things in the piece where I assume they were used to signal, you know, malice and premeditation, right? But for me, what they signaled is this person not taking responsibility. To write, you know, he poured us white wine. I would have preferred red, but I didn't have a choice. It's problematic. What are you trying to signal with that? What I hear is you drank white wine and you wanted red. Did you say something? I have questions. Did you ask for red and you didn't get it? Did he force white wine down your throat? Like, what was going on? I have more questions when I read a line like that, right? And so when I participate in consent culture and I give workshops on consent, consent isn't only the dominant person. That person is not always a man. But let's say the dominant character or personality asking for consent. Consent is also the person who may feel to be in a less dominant position, speaking up and saying what they want and what they don't want. Consent is both on both sides. Not only does someone have to seek consent, someone has to also be prepared to do more than nonverbal cues.
Sure.
And she specifically put in her text to Aziz the next day that he didn't respond to her nonverbal cues, but he did respond to her verbal cues.
So when she said no the first time, he was like, okay, let's take a chill pill.
Right.
When, and they were when both she said maybe naked. Not, to, when she said not tonight, did he say, okay, absolutely not tonight?
They were both, look, we weren't there. We only have one side of the account. And you have a whole lot of opinions about how that played out. We have her account of it. That's all we have. That's how she read the situation. That's how she heard it. We don't know how it went for him in his mind. What I do know is they were both still naked and chilling. So that's a nonverbal cue too, right? So the nonverbal cue, I don't want this, next to the nonverbal cue, but we still naked chilling on the couch. And we just met. This is our first date. And we real comfortable like that?
I'm sorry.
After the situation where they looked in the mirror and he said, okay, for real, let's chill with clothes on this time. I'm not saying anything is right or wrong. I'm just saying this is not black and white. And I know you and a lot of other people like to see things as black and white, but I don't see this as black and white.
Look, don't be throwing shade at me personally talking about I like to see things as black and white because I'm going to fight you. I'm going to take a fight. I'm going to take a fight, bitch. I will come to where you at and not before. Talking about how's that for black and white? All right, listen.
Look, I'm not trying to be Matt Damon or Lena Dunham. I'm just saying everybody has a lot of opinions about something where they were not. We don't have at this point in time, we don't have any type of pattern or behavior.
I get that. He is a celebrity, has a whole ass PR firm. I'm sure Aziz is not having his cousin write the press release.
No, you can't be sure of that.
Wait, of course not. So if there were some factual things, it could have been in his statement. It was not in his statement that there were some factual things that were not accurate.
Because it, with your argument, a PR company might have been like, that's not a good play if we start going in for facts. And it's not a good play in this situation. His statement pretty much was in line with his original response in the text, in my opinion. There was not much difference in how he responded.
That you know might be listening to this. If you give someone consent to do whatever, you could give them consent to do all the things. You can revoke consent 2 minutes later, 5 minutes later. You could be naked when you revoke that consent. You could be inebriated when you revoke that consent.
Can I just say that?
I think that needs to be said. So I think that we're the millennials.
You talk about I'm throwing shade. You're trying to claim that I was throwing shade. And you're trying to throw shade right now. All I'm saying is agency goes both ways.
So in terms of agency, what millennials are saying, as far as I understand it, I myself am not a millennial. I just play one on TV. What they're saying, as far as I understand it, is, look, you know, we can revoke consent at any time, in any situation, no matter whatever that is. And in any other situation, if these same cues were given, people would understand them and take them as cues. And we know what coercion looks like. And we know when someone is trying to persuade us to do something. And here's a situation where you have one participant who's saying, maybe not. And another participant who is enthusiastically all about, yes, definitely yes. Let's figure out how we can get to the yes. And in a sexual relationship, that is a problem. If we look at statistics, the reality for whoever Grace may be is that there's a probability, a high probability, that she is a victim of previous sexual assault or harassment, right? So she's coming in there with all this baggage about stuff. Now, Aziz is not necessarily responsible for that, but we have to be real about the power dynamics that we have that are at play when we're in intimate relationships with people. We have to understand that if, you know, we have people coming in to our beds and to our lives that do not feel like they have any agency, that we should affirm to them that within that interaction with us, that they do have that agency. Firstly, by really responding to when they say no, because that no might have been very hard to get to, even if they've got like a ton of different other things going on, but the sky is blue, but your dress is red. Who cares? If they have uttered an even weak, maybe not, or no, or not tonight, I think that we need to hear that. And the moment we don't hear that, people understand, because of how sexual assault has worked, that these small no's, if these small no's can't be accepted, these larger no's definitely won't be accepted. And so some women, not all, are like Grace. They are not interested in fighting. They're definitely not going to fight their mentor or their, you know, someone they've been fangirling over, someone who's a big star to them, someone who they've been trying to get to date for a minute. They're not going to fight that person.
I don't think that Aziz was any of those things. That's not what she wrote.
But at the same time, or for whatever reason, she didn't feel like fighting. I don't know. But at the same time, what she, if we take everything she said in there as fact, that I would be appalled if my son had a date that looked like that. I would feel as a failure if my son had a date that looked like that. I definitely won't have dates that look like that because I'm not Grace, right? So either we gonna fight or it's a no, right? But a lot of women are Grace. And what are we doing for those Graces? Are we just telling them, okay, you just have to fuck up? Yes, Grace has agency. I would love to live in a world where a Grace has agency in the first grade, second grade, third grade, and so on. But the world that we live in now,
you can get off it. You have been on the call desk for a moment. That's great. That's all great. All I'm saying is, I agree. His behavior was bad. There's something to be learned from it. But I'm saying, within the context, this was a first encounter. They discontinued communication after that. He responded with an apology. He said he clearly misread the situation. He didn't try to continue to contact her after that. So what is her intention at this time to write a piece that goes public like this? Because she's mad that he's wearing a Time's Up pin. What's really happening here? How is this educating him?
Is it not her story to tell? It's her story to tell, is it not? This is her experience. As far as I know, no one.
Okay, so because he's
her story to tell.
Because he's a star, he can have somebody go and write a 3,000-word piece about him and how he, you know, had this encounter. That's okay. 100%. We can always do that.
Wait a second. No. She does not feel this encounter is consensual, and this kind of encounter is typical in the dating scenes nowadays. Stereotypical. I don't think that this is an atypical experience.
So this is the thing, though. People always say this, right? I can do what I want on my Facebook profile. I can do what I want on my Instagram profile. But when it affects other people, can you really? Because I'm just asking. So what's the difference to the girl who just got expelled from the University of Alabama for using racial slurs? It was on her YouTube profile. She can do what she wants. It's her YouTube profile. This wasn't Grace's YouTube profile. She went to a publication. She went to an outlet to tell her story. She didn't use her own platform to tell her story.
I have a question. Do you feel this was a violation of Aziz Ansari's privacy?
The way the story was told, I think she probably would have done better to tell the story differently.
She probably would have done better to tell the story to a different journalist. She herself is not a journalist. She's a source. Grace is a source. And that's the problem here, is that we have to separate out her story and what Babe.net did with that story. What Katie Wade did with that story was reprehensible because they just didn't have the chops to handle a story of this nuance and magnitude. And lots of people have written about why that is, right? Lots of people that are amazing journalists that have written about why that is. But she's just the source. Mm-hmm. So do you think that you would have felt differently if she told her story to someone who was really capable, like I'm going to butcher this name. Ijeoma of the establishment.
Yeah, actually, Ijeoma would have done a different job with it. But at this point. Right. But that's a hypothetical. I don't know who told the story, how, and what Katie did with it. Katie might have just had some dictation. Katie might have just been typing. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, I think it is problematic, and I've always said this, that I can engage in something, right? I don't need people to be able to just like do what they want with that at a later date because they mad about, you know, Stacey getting all this, whatever. I don't think she deserves it. Let me go tell my story. I think that is a problem. And that is a problem that we're dealing with in today's age. Absolutely. I think it's problematic. What's the difference to,
questions. I want to clarify. So you think this, do you think that this is sort of like a journalistically analogous to like a revenge porn type of situation?
I mean, I don't see it as Rob and Black revenge porn. I don't necessarily see it as the same thing as revenge porn. But to a certain degree, I understand the analogy, yes. Because there's a level of description in there that doesn't serve any purpose but to humiliate. That's how I see it personally. I don't have to have that level of description to understand what happened that night.
What I'm saying to you is I get that. I feel like if she had gone to a better journalist, you would not have that level of description. Because sources give you
sure
everything. They just dump it. They dump it. And it is your job as a journalist to shift through all of that and cut to the meat and figure out how you want to frame the story and what's relevant to the story in a way that is has integrity and is responsible. They couldn't do that with her, unfortunately, but her story is still her story.
Yeah, of course. I'm not denying her story, but that's the only story we've heard about something that is quite complex. When it comes to this type of thing, when it comes to consent, because I hold a lot of consent workshops,
mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of stories like this, right? And that's not a good thing, but it is really hard to disentangle in the way that, that's all I'm criticizing, is this dichotomy that I see happening online, right? Mm-hmm. There are the center of right people who are excited to use it to derail Me Too and Time's Up. Mm-hmm. There are the second and third wave feminists who are pissed about that, so they want to disregard mm-hmm. it completely.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people who have experienced similar situations who see themselves in it. And so they're swinging in the other direction. You know, this is what it looks like. And we have to be angry about this. And I'm saying, I think there's something in between. In our second segment, what holiday was it this week that was celebrated in the U.S., but also acknowledged across the world?
Was it Frederick Douglass Day?
Yes. You know, he's doing a great job.
He's making more progress every day.
Just really popular right now. In the U.S., Monday was celebrated as Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, which is kind of a holiday. I say kind of because you don't have to get off work for it. It's not like that. There are plenty of people who still have to work on MLK Day.
It's like a national optional holiday.
Exactly. But I'm not going to hate on it because Coretta Scott King put in a lot of work to uphold MLK's legacy. And this was one of her major achievements.
Even though John McCain voted against it.
Look, we're not going to give a lot. Okay. He's voted against a lot of things. That's another day.
The Maverick.
And it was obviously a big moment because of timing. We didn't bother talking about it last week, and I don't want to spend too much time on it now. But as some of you know, a certain person who was pretending to play president in the White House was in a meeting with a bunch of white folks. Oh, actually, not only white people, as it turns out, but perceived white people, and felt comfortable enough to use derogatory terms about countries of the Caribbean and Africa. One of those terms that has most prominently been repeated is he called them shithole countries. And of course, at first, the White House didn't even deny that it was used. And eventually, after noticing the backlash, that person pretending to play president came on Twitter to deny that he used the term. We all know he did. Enough people have come out to say he used the term. What does this have to do with MLK? I'm not really sure, to be honest. I guess it has to do with the fact that white people have sanitized and whitewashed his contribution to the civil rights movement in the U.S. and like to use his quotes against perceived radical black activists. Even though we all know the history, we all know that the FBI had a huge operation to dehumanize and negate all of his work. We all know that nobody was upset about his assassination at the time when it comes to government and so on and so forth, right? So the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. was probably the turning point that allowed him to have like this different type of legacy. And so there was this social media war that ensued, which was really fun to watch on Twitter, to be honest. Black activists that I follow calling out everybody who was trying to use an MLK quote, especially the people who were in that room when shithole countries was said over and over and over again. But how does this move the conversation forward? I don't understand.
Well, let me start with MLK. The reason why his legacy was shifted in the wake of his death is because you can do things to a dead man that you can't do to a living one.
Sure.
And we don't even just see that on the left, but we see that on the right. Absolutely. There are things that were done with the legacy of Ronald Reagan that, as a person that was alive and in the States at the time of that pregnancy and had to survive that pregnancy in the city of New York, mm-hmm. in the city of New York as mm-hmm. a poor person, I have to tell you, like this... You know, this kind of hysteria that people are having about Trump, imagine being a child in the midst of that. And imagine being a poor black child sometimes in the projects in the midst of that. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's what my reality was when Reagan was president. Mm. But that legacy has been so sanitized and deified that you wouldn't know that we've already had a Trump. Because it's not about the language, it's about the policy.
Absolutely.
It's about the policy, right?
And policy-wise, he's not even doing that much right now in comparison to what Reagan did in the 80s.
Well, I mean...
He hasn't achieved nearly as much. Reagan actually had a government functioning, right? He had people who were ready, who had served in civil service for years, where we have a very dysfunctional White House at this time that isn't putting policy forward. It's just kind of depending on Congress to come up with things while also turning back everything that Obama did.
I get that. At the same time, we can't negate the way that he is affecting change is through monkey wrenching existing systems, right? Absolutely. So he's basically hamstring the EPA, the Department of Education. So NASA, I mean, like he's about to defund HUD. Like look at who he put in positions of power in those places, or in lots of cases, he just won't appoint anybody.
Right.
I'm in Austria. We have no American ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
He dismissed all the ambassadors mm-hmm. for us expats in foreign countries. He's dismissed all of the American ambassadors, and he only puts them in places that he feels. And most of those positions are left unfilled and will be left unfilled for his tenure, mm-hmm. because what he's about is destabilizing the institutions that are there.
Except the federal judges. Right, that will be his lasting legacy. That will be his lasting legacy.
He wants to stack those as much as possible.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot that radical conservatives that is now, you know, the Republican Party and anarchists have in common. Like, they want to burn the fucking house down. They're right. like, oh, no. You know, like, that's essentially what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an enormous power he has for erosion. That he is using very strategically and very effectively, because it would be hard to even for the next president, even if we got the best president in the world, it would be hard for the next administration even to look at all of the things that were broken in the years that Trump was president, because all he's doing right now is breaking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So policy is just a part of what the president does. And yeah, we see that he's not having many wins there. But the point is, they don't really want a functioning government. They don't really want that anyway, unless it serves them. So that's not even really the point. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to, what I was trying to get at before is that people have sanitized MLK's legacy to the point that he's not even recognizable to MLK.
Right.
MLK right. come back and be like, what are you talking about? Like, who? I didn't die for interracial relationships. Or whatever you think this is about, you know.
I didn't die. I didn't die. Right. For you to take away affirmative action, because right. that's because that's what people always try to bring up, right? Right. What was his dream? Right. That we won't be judged by the color of our skin? Yes.
Yeah, so they cherry pick these quotes. They've never read a full speech.
No.
They've never read a full, you know, any of his works. They've never followed his movement. But they'll cherry pick these, you know, beautiful quotes that, you know, allow for their confirmation bias to remain intact.
Right.
That's what they did for Ronald Reagan. Mm. That's what they'll do for Trump when we overhear geriatric. Let's be real.
Of course.
At the end of the day.
Or, well, I think it depends on some certain outcomes. Certain outcomes that people might, they might try to demonize him as the sole reason these bad things mm-hmm. happened. And we were, you know, and we white people, we were all just bystanders and we did what we could. But, you know, he has so much power.
Right.
It could happen that way, too.
They try to sanitize McCain and he's just almost dead. He's not even dead yet. Like and they try to sanitize him all the time. He voted against anything that was right and good in this world. Let's just be real. Mm-hmm. That's who McCain is as a person.
Yes.
But, you know, his brand is that he's a maverick. That's his brand. When he's not at all.
Well, he has the benefit of, you know, his father and his grandfather, who, of course, have an aircraft carrier named after them. So he can that brand works, right? Because it goes beyond him. It's generations of mavericks. And because the U.S. specifically, but not only the U.S., there's this desire to, there's this love for the uniform. And, mm-hmm. you know, as someone who was captured and a prisoner of war, there's a lot of respect for that. Absolutely. At the same time, that doesn't make you infallible. That doesn't make you always right. You can have gone through extreme situations and hardship and still come out ignorant.
Yeah. Look, I'm here to reclaim MLK Day, right? You have a Pence who's the VP who's trying to like put up a big up on MLK Day when he's walking out of legal, nonviolent protests against police brutality at football game in a performative way that costs taxpayers money. You have people that don't understand the significance of Black Lives Matter and the fact that they are living in a flashpoint moment in the history, the timeline of civil rights. They don't understand that, but they can like look back longingly at a Gandhi or at a MLK. So it's interesting.
What I did enjoy seeing the Haitians, probably some of the most resilient people of the world, who were in New York, and after they, a very large group of them, who were in New York, and after they left Times Square, decided to have a little jam session out in front of Trump Towers, singing, dancing as they continued their walk. And it was a great, you know, it was great to see. Conan O'Brien right now has gone to Haiti to do, I don't know what, make a statement.
He's gonna get sunburned.
He's very pale. You know, he'll make that joke about himself. But, you know, it was fun to watch what's already happening there. But I just want, like, at the end of the day, I still wonder. There's always this outrage, and the outrage happens online. But what's next?
Yeah, it's frustrating in this Trump moment, especially because there have been so, especially in the beginning of his pregnancy, presidency, I'm sorry, not pregnancy.
Yeah, it's been on your mind today. Uh-huh.
Ooh, let's give him a test. In the beginning of his presidency, there were so many gotcha moments where almost every week there was a headline. I was like, oh, this is going to do it. He's toast now. It's over. And we were operating on Obama standard.
Right.
And after Obama and Michelle were having a chuckle because Black people's standards are not white people's standards. I'm going to be with Omarosa on this when she went on that talk show and said, I'm not white. I can't be mediocre.
Oops. That's probably the most honest thing she's ever said.
That is one of the most honest things she said. I have to be excellent. I can't be mediocre. And people experienced that, and now they got this.
Right.
And so they were operating on Obama standards of what a scandal would be. Right. You know, his scandal was he was wearing a tan suit.
I was about to say, wearing beige tacky pants. That's a scandal.
they were operating on that. And, you know, now it's like, you know, he like paying for hookers. Like, it's descended to the point where we got information, like real legitimate information about he paid for a specific hooker who's still alive.
Well, No, she has a non-disclosure agreement. But, you know, they found the paper trail. $130,000 hush money.
And yes, any a publication will pay that fine, that NDA fine. So they were like,
TMZ has all the money. I'm sure they'll pay it.
Sure. And so Stormzy was like, well, let me tell you what it was. And so when his wife just had the baby and they were married, his current wife now, mm-hmm. he was, you know, up in here doing all kinds of stuff with me. So we already have all this information. And we're just like, oh, we already need that. I guess it's consensual sex, I guess. I don't know. Like, people are so worn out. And it's such a frustrating presidency to experience. Because we got, you know, Teflon Don, right? Like, he came up from the ranks of white mediocrity that has been completely rewarded for his mediocrity every single time. And he also comes from a very mafia mentality, right? So he's handling things in a way that people aren't used to seeing things openly handled in Washington. Maybe covertly, but not openly and blatantly like this. Even Lindsey Graham, when he was asked about the shithole comment in a direct interview, was like, look, I want to continue being able to talk to the president. And then refuse to answer directly.
That's interesting, because Lindsey is actually, a lot of people come for Lindsey, and I'm not saying that he has good politics, or policies, I should say. But he's been against this man from the beginning, and it hasn't changed.
Of course. And then you got Ann Coulter, who is like a famous, you know, horrible, right-wing, racist person, saying this, coming from Ann Coulter. Now listen to this, saying, you know, because this whole thing came out about, you know, the fictitious height and weight of Agent Orange, right, of the 45. So she said, well, you know, President Trump would lose a lot of weight if he took Lindsey Graham's nose out of his ass. That's coming from Ann Coulter. Dealing with a circus at this point. So either you become apathetic, you're frustrated, you're down to it. But what's really hard is for people who are in the situation that I was in during the Reagan presidency, seeing the spiral out of control, not knowing if this will affect their food stamps next month, their health care next month, their housing the month after that. This is a horrible situation for them to be in. So I get back to my central point, which is not about the language. The language is horrible, whatever. But the policies were horrible even when the language was perfect. You know, Reagan always had the best language to go with the nonsense that he was saying, right? You could never catch him on language stuff. But the policies were the same kind of nonsense that you have. Maybe less blatant, because he couldn't get away with all the blatant stuff. But the policies had the same effect. And that's all Jim Crow is. Jim Crow doesn't always say blacks here, whites over here.
Right.
But what Jim Crow does is it says the effects will be blacks will be here, whites will be here. And so that's what Jim Crow does.
Right.
It's not, you know, people don't understand that most Jim Crow laws do not explicitly mention race. That's why we have laws on the books, like the lack of a minimum wage for farm workers, that are still on the books today in the United States, that are an effect of the legacy of Jim Crow laws. Why did they have that laws? Because black people were farm working back then. That's why they had those laws. You know, and we never got a fair wage for our farm work. So here we are, you know, and there's something a bit liberating about the language fitting the policy. But it doesn't help people that have to deal with the effects of those policies.
In our final segment, what are we looking forward to? What's making us happy? Okay, people can't see you voguing right now. They just hear you out of tune. So let me ask you again.
So now you're coming for my voice.
No.
Okay. All right. So you know what? When I go on a world tour and when I break out my SoundCloud, you're not getting tickets.
Okay.
So you could.
I don't need tickets because I'm going to be in VIP, but go on.
Oh, wow. Wow. So So here's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to the outcome of Tracee Ellis Ross asking for her fair share of the pie on the Black-ish set, because I'm very much interested in how that plays out.
I'm interested too. For those of you who don't know, Black-ish raked it up at the NAACP Image Awards this week. And Tracee Ellis Ross, next to Kerry Washington and Lena Waithe and all the peoples, gave a great speech on stage. Ava DuVernay also gave a great speech when she won. Anyway, moving on. And, you know, a lot of Black-ish characters won big. So go on.
Right, right. I'm also looking forward to Gabrielle Union in a Bad Boys reboot.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? Mm-hmm. So they just put out a still, and she looking fierce, and she looks fierce all the time. Yeah. Let's just be real.
She looks good.
They put out a still. She gonna be working in 2018. She is booked to the hilt, and I really just need more of her in my life. I'm about to read her book.
Do you really need more of her?
We're gonna need more wine, and I'm reading her book because the Black People in Vienna group here, they started a book club.
Oh, nice.
And so that is the first book. I got to get the Kindle because, you know, I'm late, you know. So I got to get the download. You know,
let me know if it's any good. I'm interested to know. I would read her book. I just, you know.
But I'm very much interested in her sexual politics because she is a very, you know, ethical slutty, right? In the sense of the excerpts that I've read.
She cheated on her and had a baby, so.
What'd you say?
I'm sorry, go on.
Wow. All I'm saying, in her own sexual politics,
yes,
I think
absolutely.
A couple of things can happen when people are assaulted. As we know, Gabrielle Union was assaulted as a teenager. Mm-hmm. Brutally raped as a teenager and had to deal with that in a very open way. It happened when she was on the job, her parents were informed, the police came, all the things happened. The guy's still in jail. Mm-hmm. As someone who did that, and I think part of her process being that she had all these resources available to her, like therapy and so on, it led her to almost like a amazing politic around her own body and about sexual stuff. And I'm really interested in learning more about that.
I'm sure that's going to be interesting. I'm currently reading Grace Jones's autobiography. That's one of the things that I'm excited about. And I haven't even gotten that far in it, but it's great. And now I understand her preface. In the preface, she says she knows family was going to be afraid for what this was going to put out. But they always knew it was coming. And I thought that was interesting because I was like, ooh, we about to find out all her dirty secrets. And then it starts somewhere completely different. It starts with her upbringing. And that's what she was referring to. Mm. How she was raised. Very difficult upbringing with a lot of physical abuse. But Grace is just, she just distills it in this way. So I'm really excited about that autobiography. I can recommend it to everyone. And I'm also excited. I very rarely put my own things on, but on Sunday, it's the third part in a 4-part series that I'm doing with my yoga project, yoga specifically for Black women and women of color. We have an urban retreat on Sunday called Authentic Desire, where we will have Kundalini yoga in the first part. And in the second part, orgasmic yoga. The whole series has been about consent, embodiment, knowing what your desires are, knowing how to communicate those, and we're going deep on Sunday.
That sounds freaky.
There will be no nudity in this session.
Okay.
There will be no nudity.
All right. Cool. Then I'm not coming. So... enjoy it.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can, drop by patreon.com/thequeertruth and donate to help us keep this thing going. Until next time, peace out.